there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 330. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, pen an email, and send it on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowissogay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in thisshowissogay. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have such a fun episode for you this week. We must get started with our first guest. Kim David Smith is an award-winning singer, a performer, an artist, a model, and so much more. His electropop albums, Nova Supernova, and his cabaret EP, The Tease, are available worldwide on iTunes and Amazon. His videos for the singles Jealous and Shooting Star went all kinds of viral. He's performed in cabarets regularly in New York City and all around the world. He was honored with the Backstage Magazine Bistro Award for Special Achievement as an Outstanding Performer. He's been nominated for like 46 Manhattan Association of Cabaret Awards in the Outstanding Male Vocalist category. He's also the recipient of the American-Australian Association's Dame Joan Sutherland Award for Aspiring Artists, and now he is here with us. Kim, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
46 MAC Award nominations. Did I count that correctly?
Yes. Well, you sort of lowballed me, but it's all right.
That's my bad. We have so much to chat about. Are you ready?
I am. I'm fairly ready.
All right. Well, we're going to notch that fairly up to completely. I described you in your bio, singer, performer, artist, model. Is there a particular label that you gravitate towards?
It really just depends which room I'm in, how much clothing I'm wearing, and who's there for what. It really just depends. Do a lot of art modeling. I'm a cabaret performer and an electropop singer. I do those things at the same time now. I do a lot of like Dietrich mashed up with Madonna. I do Kylie mashed up with Piaf. I do my own stuff mashed up with Olivia Newton-John. And then there's a whole bunch of non-mashed up things available too for those who like just one song at a time.
I love it. It's like you make music for the ADD in all of us that can't focus. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Now, you just opened this door, so let's just walk through it quickly and see what's on the other side. You introduced the idea that it depends on how much clothing you are wearing at the time. Is it fair to say that through some of your projects, maybe through some modeling and maybe through some videos, you are not dressed in a three-piece suit? You perhaps are wearing a bit less.
Yes, that would be fair enough.
Okay. We don't talk about modeling that much on This Show Is So Gay for the past 7+ years. Talk to me. I know nothing about that world, Kim. Tell us about that world.
Well, gosh, what is there to tell? I really love to pose for artists, and art schools. It's just really fun for me. I do a lot of work on my body. I'm a personal trainer also. And so for me to put it to some practical use like that is just really, really fun.
Let me just get some free personal training tips. You're on the call. What are we doing wrong that we need to know about?
I would say just like straight off of the bat, more functional movement, functional training to get a more comprehensive, cohesive body. Never, ever, ever ignore lower body. I always start off with lower body, be it squats, deadlifts, or some Viper combinations. Vipers, for those who don't know, are weighted rubber tubes, and they're absolutely awesome. They're really, really fun.
Look at that.
Throw those things around. But that'd be my... Oh, and I mean, just like diet and cardio if you really, really want some abs.
Okay. So you're saying there shouldn't be a disconnect between the upper body and the lower body?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Do it all at the same time.
All right. I got my work cut out for me now. That's fine. You know, one thing that has certainly come up quite a bit on our show is that intersection between identifying as gay and body image issues. It's certainly a big topic for our community. I would imagine that that is something that you have run across.
Absolutely. And I deal with my own body issues and concerns by just really putting it all out there. My Instagram is full of work I've posed for artists and dear friends. It's like, I mean, everything is out there. It helps me really like free myself from my own judgments, because really nothing anybody can say is worse than what I say to myself some of the time.
Yeah.
I'm fairly obsessed with being productive at every given moment, and I fall short of my own standards basically all of the time. So it's very, very freeing to just say, this is where I am today. This is what I look like. This is how a certain artist, be it photographer, painter, or a sculptor has seen me in this moment, and it's super freeing.
Now, was it always that way with you? I'm not saying that this is a Kim David Smith counseling session, otherwise I would bill you accordingly, but was this a journey, or was that something that was always kind of your MO of putting yourself out there in this way?
Well, for me, it's always been a part of supplemental singing work and noise. Like one of my favorite things to do on a rainy day when I'm not being productive, which is never, is to sit at home with a cup of pretend coffee. I'm just like, this is all pretend. I never actually get to do this. And look through some of my, because Kylie Minogue is my Jesus, just by the way. That informs a lot of what we're going to talk about. But I'll look through her like coffee table books and things, and just this like plethora of images of her just as muse to, like, I mean, it's got to be thousands and thousands of photographers and artists at this point, is really exciting, and it makes me excited to go through her older catalog again and different like eras of her and that sort of thing. And so her, and also like the Weimar period, which I mine a lot for a lot of my cabaret work. My cabaret stuff is very dark and investigative. There is like it's a little of glitter. It's glitter and doom, and essentially how to really wrap it up with a ribbon, a black ribbon, a black sparkly ribbon. it's all about like Anita Berber danced to Misha Spolyansky's Morphium naked, while totally f***ed up on morphine, and she died when she was like 23. But like it was always about, and she like posed for Otto Dix and other awesome artists of the time. And it was about all the like the interweaving of the disciplines. And so that's pretty much what it's all about for me. It's that Kylie business and then the Anita Berber business.
Now, we have talked about Judy Garland. We have talked about Cher. We've talked about Madonna. I can't say that we have spent that many minutes on the air talking about Kylie. What does Kylie mean to you? Obviously, it's religious at this point.
Well, she's my patroness, for a start.
Nice.
So that, you know, that happens a lot because that's real. But Kylie is super important. Full period. Period. Kylie's important. If that's your takeaway from the interview, then like, let's run with that. Print T-shirt. She is where Madonna is like pure ambition incarnate. Kylie is about making sure everyone's having a good time. Really working on her singing. Her journey as a singer from 87 through to today is really remarkable. Her soprano is just silvery and delightful. Her pitch is phenomenal live, and she's really connected to her text a lot of the time, which is so rare on the pop stage. And I just think she's awesome in all regards. Like, it's really hard for me to boil it down and dissect it, because I received for my sixth birthday her first album on vinyl when I was six, and just ever since then, she's just been like a major presence in my life. So... and I giggle about it. I get serious about it. That whole spectrum fluctuates for me as well.
Have you had the opportunity to meet Kylie Minogue?
We have crossed paths several times, always in major like fan, I don't really want to say crazy, but slightly fan crazy kind of a way. You know, like book signings, whatever. I always just stop her and say, you're the prettiest person I've ever seen in real life. And it's absolutely true. Sorry, Mom. My mom is beautiful. They're kind of similar, actually. Maybe that's the whole thing. Hello, Sarah.
Wow, this really, I am billing you for this session. That is clear.
You had best bill. This is going to be expensive. She is an absolute sweetheart. She is nice to absolutely everybody. There's one story of her hitting a drag queen in the eye socket with a pool cue when they were pissing her off in the 90s. One story, you know, and the rest of the time. And I think that's why she doesn't have tons of traction here in the U.S. A, because the U.S. came around to electropop way later than everybody else did.
Right.
And that's her wheelhouse. And then B, there's nothing bad to write about her.
Right.
You know, there is zero negative press. Granted, that theory doesn't hold up at all in England because they thrive on it. They're just, that's what they're all about with their horrible tabloid newspapers. But,
right.
You really, so that's weird. But then again, Neighbours, the TV show that she began her career with, had a lot of traction there, blah, blah, blah. Look, you asked for it, and this, we are now in the wormhole.
I love it. So, I love this wormhole.
We are going deep.
If we have a listener out there who's like, I don't know this Kylie person, I know this is going to be a very difficult question for you, but I need you to honor the spirit of the question and try to answer it.
Yeah.
If you had to pick one song that you would say, all right, you have to check out this song, I know this will be difficult for you, but what would you point people towards? I know.
Well,
I know.
The sort of like the no-brainer, and probably the one I wouldn't say, is Can't Get You Out of My Head, because it's so deliciously robo-Kylie.
Right.
Kai Borg-ish, if you will. And just like that song took over the world. But I think Spinning Around from Light Years really encapsulates her like joyous sexiness. It's just so delightful.
Nice.
Now we're going to get into like albums. I mean, you've got to listen to Impossible Princess. You have to listen to Fever. You've got to listen to Light Years. X is amazing. It's the only album that I keep reshuffling the order in my brain. I'm not convinced they arrived at the right song, like track listing for that one. And then Poor Little Kiss Me Once, which came out in, it was last year. That one's a really good listen. I just wish it sold better.
Okay.
Before you.
I didn't even know that my disco needed me until Kylie told me so.
Well, nobody did.
Yeah.
Nobody
there you
did.
Go.
And that's, she's an oracle too.
Yeah. And I will just say this, sometimes when I'm out with a friend, we often try to figure out which one of us is the Kylie and which one is the Danny. Any love for Danny Minogue?
Oh my God! Like, okay, you were. Well, I almost wish we didn't start talking about this because I'm going crazy. But Danny's 2003 album Neon Nights is actually one of the best pop albums ever made.
I have no idea.
It is flawless from start to the end. It is just, I mean, Put the Needle on It is sexy and dirty and funny at the same time a little bit. And her in the video, it's a not super expensive looking video, but her haircut is just amazing, and she looks like at least $50,000 worth of Danny Minogue. She just looks amazing. I mean, she spent a lot of money on herself, but she looks phenomenal. That is just a brilliant pop album, and her voice is great. It's just really, really cool. And she's had little like blips of awesomeness, but nothing too consistent. But then in reading her biography, her autobiography, of course, because she wrote it, just like looking at her career, because I'm sort of like, well, why doesn't Danny try harder? And as an artist myself, I'm like, shut up. But in reading it, it's just like, wow, careers just sometimes blossom and wilt and blossom and wilt. And it's just, I mean, it's really bonkers the way that opportunity and the muse visits people. It's really surprising. So I try not to judge people and their careers by the cover.
You understand that I am picturing you talking right now about Kylie and Danny, and in my head, you're just bouncing up and down on your toes.
I'm actually levitating.
Outside of Kylie's house, because the description there sounded a little restraining order-ish, but it was awesome. It was awesome. It's good
totally.
Stuff. Okay.
She's one of my chief sources of inspiration. She's not all of it. She's certainly a chief source. And in my like personal like time off listening, she is a source of joy,
nice.
You know, and has been since I was six. So you can't really like compete with that. Though Beatrice does give her a run for her money sometimes.
Now, I would assume then that an individual courting you in some way, if they just said, no, I don't like Kylie, that's got to be a deal breaker for you.
Well, I don't know. It's just like, it's a level of ignorance that I sort of like, it depends how patient I'm feeling on a day. because then I also, this has been really exciting, that moving to America is she's like almost like my secret. And she's this like, I mean, stadium filling like pixie everywhere else. But here, like, I can, like, show people Kylie and be like, this is this, and just and sort of steward their, like, initiation, which is bizarrely thrilling.
Yeah. For those of us of a certain generation, we can pick out Kylie, like, if, oh, I don't know Kylie, really? Because it's the song that is playing when Brian sees Justin for the first time as queer, on Queer as Folk. That was a really big deal for many of us. Love at First Sight, a big deal, a big deal. All right.
Which is a great song.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Okay, we're going to climb out of the Kylie wormhole, although this segment brought to you by Kylie's fan club, which was amazing. Let's talk about the wonderful world of cabaret. Just generally, what does the art form of cabaret mean to you? How does that allow you to express yourself in a different way than other mediums?
Look, for me, I have a BA in music theater that I achieved in Australia before I moved here, and the climate of theatre in Australia, we don't have tons of musicals coming. I mean, there's maybe like four or five running at any given moment, like throughout the country, in terms of the big, big like Broadway tours, that sort of thing. And they'll have like residences in different cities of maybe like, I don't know, 4 or so months, depending on how tickets go.
Okay.
It's all very like fluid like that. But it's the same people auditioning, the same people getting roles all the time. And so the people who ran my university, the University of Ballarat, Kim Durbin, she was the head of drama, and she was like, you know, make your own work. It was drilled into me, make your own work. You cannot rely on auditions. And the idea thrilled me anyway, and I've just always gravitated towards electropop and the Weimar period, and certainly the sort of the angle that they had, that they have on like live performance. I always found it delightfully creepy, and so I just straight out of the gate started doing my stuff, and it's been 10 years now, and I kind of can't imagine being in shows. I'll do shows, sure, if it's like really great, you know, money and lots of fun and stuff, but it's absolutely my preference to be by myself with my arrangements of songs and my own songs with my band, and just creating worlds that I have imagined completely in my own little quietness.
So amazing.
That's my absolute preference. And so cabaret to me is a place where intimate art still lives. It can be super cinematic depending on how you are selling a song. But basically you are in blackness, just you, the audience. The audience has to work. They have to imagine all of the things you're singing about. They relate things to themselves, see things on you from their own lives. It's really just like a beautiful exchange. I really, really love it. And really the only, well, there's probably a ton of words for it, but intimate really like sums it up for me. It's a really intimate exchange and feels like a conversation, even though I'm like, be quiet, this is my show. And we're talking. You know, so it's, I just find it really, really exciting. I really love it.
And you get to work with amazing people. I have to do a little bit of a shout out to, I was 19 years old in New York City and working at a place called The Oaks. And I had no business being a singing waiter at that time because I really was not polished enough to be doing that kind of work. But I worked with a piano player who was so amazingly supportive and coached me through it and increased my confidence in just incredible ways, and really led to a lot of the success that I've experienced. And that piano player was Tracy Stark.
Oh, Tracy's amazing.
Isn't
she? Just
she?
Played my new show.
I know.
I love her so dearly. She is. She is super duper supportive. And just really, she, for this show, which was a new program for me, really provided a really rock solid foundation. And that all of the things you just said are intrinsically Tracy. That's her.
So
yeah,
great.
That's awesome. I love that you know Tracy.
I just made her sound older than she is. She was only 12 years old when that all happened. I'm just putting that out there. Just want to put that out there. So folks should check her out, TracyStark.com. She's amazing, amazing. What is one of those times that you got on stage and just felt like, oh my gosh, this was one of the most incredible experiences for me? What was one of those that you just pumped your arms right in the air afterwards?
Oh, that's a really good question. Well, probably my new program. I really adore this one. This is one where I do, like, it sounds like Can't Get Out of My Head, but it's French like ballad over the top, and it's just cool, and it just, we really achieved a lot of sounds in Stargazing, my new show, that I've been cultivating in my mind for some time. And to really just like see everything bloom and like all the lights switch on like that was just so amazing and rewarding. So that felt great. But I've also had like, I just these like super unexpected blitz of awesomeness. Like this year, I didn't feel like it warranted pumping because it was just such a surprise, but I was nominated for a Helpman Award in Australia, which is based, not to sound like a crazy person, but it's the equivalent of the Tonys.
Nice.
In Australia, and I was nominated for one for my tour that I did last year there. I tour Australia every 2 years and appear at the Adelaide Cabaret Festival, which is the largest curated cabaret festival in the world. Absolutely awesome. Bernadette Peters performs there. Joey Arias, tons of just amazing, amazing people. And my friends, Ali McGregor and Eddie Perfect, are co-curating it starting next year. And they have some really, really cool stuff lined up. It's awesome. But yeah, being nominated for that award alongside cabaret heroes of mine, like Camille O'Sullivan, who is an Irish chanteuse, she's just earth-shattering. She does a lot of Jacques Brel, and she's just amazing. Was a really galvanizing experience.
Now, you're appearing right this second on This Show Is So Gay. Talk to me about how you think that just being gay lends itself to changing maybe what you present on stage.
Okay, so for me, it is really important to be myself. I can be an arch version of myself. I can be a fantasy version of myself wearing a corset made of mirror, which incidentally is my favorite version of myself. But being myself is really important. And not since university have I sung a song about a woman. It just doesn't ring true. In my mid-20s, I found myself suddenly really exhausted by romantic comedies coming out of the U.S. And I couldn't understand. I didn't want to watch them anymore. F*** you, Sandra Bullock. I didn't want any of it.
Right.
And she's probably a nice lady. Sorry, Sandra. but I suddenly realized I was exhausted from translating the heterocentric experience. And I was just so tired of translating that. And I was not having any more of it. So for me, I sing about men. I sing women's songs about men. My music, my newer music video, Shooting Star, is myself and a friend in a loving sort of moment. And I just can't be bothered with it. I don't have time for it. I just don't care. And I was at the ballet last night, and I saw the most wonderful performance down at NYU, which had I know the choreographer, but his name is totally slipped out of my mind. And he's awesome, and he had two male-on-male pas de deux in the program.
Yeah.
And I felt so affected by it, and it just was all of that all over again. None of the translating was there, and it's such a thrill, and it gets to the center of me without all these layers of like, well, why should I, and just all the effort of translating. I'm just like done with it, and I feel like we live in a time now where let's just completely be ourselves and not even pretend. And like a lot of and cabaret in this town is wonderful. I really do love cabaret in New York City. I have a lot of gay friends who do it, who will sing about women. And I get it, like sometimes audiences skew older, or just the style of the music, it might seem weird for them to swap the gender and all of that. But I just, for me, it's just not, it has no cachet to me to sing about some pretend lady.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Well, what do you have coming up that you're excited about?
I have a bunch of things coming up that I'm excited about. Stargazing, my electro cabaret, is coming back to Joe's Pub in January, I believe. And then I have an exciting unannounced project coming up in February, a six-week, we're having 6 weeks in February. It's a six-week, beginning in February, run of a brand new project as well. And I'm super, super excited about it, but I don't think I'm allowed to talk about it yet.
Okay. That's a teaser. We call that a teaser. It's kind of like your EP. You can tease. That's fine.
Yeah.
Totally fine. Yeah. How great is Joe's Pub?
It's awesome, and they're really supportive. I've done several of my programs there in the past, and they just sometimes I miss old Joe's Pub, which had this amazing little divider in the space, and I would use that as a catwalk for my entrances. Sometimes Selena Kyle-esque, and sometimes a little bit Chimney Sweep from Mary Poppins, depending on my my balance. But it was always really, like, cool. But I really like the post-renovation Joe's as well. It's such a beautiful space. It's a little bit Las Vegas if you need it to be. It's a little bit dirty downtown if you need it to be, and it's just glorious. And not waiting outside in the cold.
Yeah.
It's really great, you know, as an audience member. So, yeah, I do. I adore them. They're incredibly, insanely supportive, and Shanta does an amazing job there.
So great. Such a great place. For our aspiring cabaret performers out there, for our aspiring artists, what's that patented piece of Kim David Smith advice that you would give, other than not ignoring their lower body?
Do not ignore your lower body. I would say be yourself.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely be yourself. Be as authentically you as possible. Add on all of the other, like, business that you think is just amazing, as long as the center of yourself is still functioning. And sing whatever the goddamn hell you want. Like, just do it. Sing anything you want.
Everybody needs to stroll on over to kimdavidsmith.com. Tons of links there. You can, of course, follow him on Facebook. He's got so many links. He's got so many videos out there. Definitely check him out. I have to tell you, I just adore listening to your music and looking at your various videos, because it is very freeing. And you are someone who puts himself out there in a way that says, look, own who you are. I am who I am. Be who you are. And I love that the word freeing just comes to mind when I think of you, because it's really empowering, the work that you do, Kim.
Well, that is really, really, really touching, because sometimes I feel like, oh, my stuff is all just a bunch of glittery nonsense, which is amazing in its own right, you know, and then sometimes I feel like I'm doing something that might echo for a while.
No, absolutely. It really is empowering. Everybody, kimdavidsmith.com. Kim, please keep doing what you're doing.
Okay.
I knew what I'd do before we met. I'd imagined you. I'd take your hand, a leap of faith, and I pray not to ever let. Hold on until dawn. Allow my weakness to make us strong. And at the end, I dream content to be back in your arms again. You needn't worry that I'm going to cry. It's only goodbye. I'll see you all the time. In fact, tonight I'll see you in the sky, my shooting star. It's insignificant to us and our ties, so I'll be alright. I'll see you all the time. Our blinding light, I'll see you in the sky, my shooting star.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have so much time to talk about all of the latest LGBT news out there, and holy cow, is there a lot of LGBT news out there. Kudos to Out Magazine. Out Magazine just put out their annual Out 100, and it's their list of the 100 most influential LGBT folks on culture right now. And there are a lot of really cool elements about this year's Out 100 to the 2015 Out 100. First is their cover. Their cover, if you haven't seen it, is a picture of President Obama. And it's not just a stock photo that they put up there. This is the first time in U.S. history that a sitting American president has posed for the cover of an LGBT magazine. And that's a really, really big deal. I knock Out Magazine quite a bit. I actually have knocked Out Magazine quite a bit over the years on this show, because they put out 12 issues a year, which is great. 12 glossy, beautiful issues. They always look very nice. But often there are straight people on the cover. And I'm all for allies, right? Like, I'm all for allies in this work. There's absolutely no way that we could make the progress that we have made without allies, without our straight allies. But it's not Ally Magazine It's Out magazine. And I've always wanted to do just a little empirical research study where I count up the number of straight people that are on the cover of Out magazine. I always just have to pause and say Out magazine because it's out. You just assume it's going to be LGBT people on the cover. And yeah, it just feels like a lot of straight people. But this is different. This is totally different. The first sitting U.S. president on the cover of an LGBT magazine. He is named the Ally of the Year. I saw some sort of blowback about that. Someone wrote an op-ed about how this isn't a good thing, that President Obama isn't a good friend to the LGBT community, and I didn't even take the time to read it. I just saw the headline because I categorically disagree. The progress that has been made under President Obama's tenure as President of the United States has been incredible. It's been incredible. Huge leaps and bounds, and there's still some time to go. So who knows what's going to happen next with President Obama? There might be more advances to be made. The other great thing about the Out 100 this year, really a great representation of individuals of color, really a great representation of trans folks, and in reading some posts online from some staff at Out magazine, it sounds like they were really intentional in that, and they really made this extra effort to get people of color on the list and to have trans representation. So always a good thing, always a good thing. I will say there were a couple questionable choices. I will just highlight one. One of the Out 100 was Roland Emmerich, the director of Stonewall. And that was just disappointing. It was disappointing. It felt like a total sellout of having this director who is widely been panned by the LGBT community. So yes, they were praising him for putting out Stonewall, the movie Stonewall, really a mass market, mass appeal movie, right? An LGBT movie that was meant for a wider audience, which you would think was really good. But then the movie came out, and by the way, even before the movie came out, it was the trailer, just showing the extraordinarily problematic representation of what went down at Stonewall and just recategorizing our history in the hands of a white Midwestern male, cisgender male who threw the first brick when we know that that's not what happened. It was trans women of color and it wasn't this Midwestern guy. And then it went further where Roland Emmerich, and I know I'm just rehashing this, but where Roland Emmerich said, yeah, he cast this guy. One of the reasons that he cast this guy, the main reason that he cast this guy, is because he was straight acting. And so again, it was this idea that, yes, if we're going to be mass market, if we're going to go for mass appeal of a wider straight audience, then we need to make our central LGBT characters more palatable. And it was gross. It was just kind of a gross thing. So it was a little disappointing to see him on there. They certainly referenced that there was some controversy, but to put him down there as a person of praise for the LGBT community, one of the top 100, I don't know. That one didn't feel right to me. But other than that, you should most definitely go check out out.com. And on out.com, you can check out this year's Out 100. Congratulations to all of the folks who are there on the Out 100. Again, President Obama on the cover. Getting that in the mail and receiving that magazine. I have a joke with Becca, my housemate here, who has co-hosted many episodes of the show. Out magazine sometimes comes in a white plastic bag, even though I've specified, please do not put it in a white plastic bag. But for those of my brothers and sisters who are in less gay-friendly areas, who really, it would not be safe for them, like actually safe for them to be getting a magazine called Out or to be getting The Advocate, that white plastic bag being mistaken for porn actually would be safer for them than their neighbors or maybe their mailman knowing that it is an LGBT magazine. That said, sometimes when it comes in the white plastic bag, it's a little embarrassing for me because Becca thinks it's porn and she makes fun of me. So know, listeners, that if you receive those magazines, you actually can specify that it not come in that white plastic bag. That said, when the magazine arrived in my mailbox and I pulled it out of my mailbox and it had President Obama on the cover, that was a really cool moment. It was a really cool moment. So go check that out. Kudos to everyone at Out Magazine and kudos to everyone on the list. Well, the huge story of this week was all about Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen's revelation on this week's Today Show. He was on an episode of the Today Show this week. He revealed that he is HIV positive. It has many HIV and AIDS organizations speaking out about the stigma that remains more than 30 years after the epidemic started. Kelsey Louie, the CEO of Gay Men's Health Crisis, who also serves on Governor Andrew Cuomo's task force to reduce the number of new HIV infections to 750 by 2020, said that he is pleased by the initial response to Charlie Sheen's announcement, that it has been positive, that it, quote, shows signs of compassion, especially on social media. He said this, quote, "We fear the media will create HIV hysteria, which will further create shame and stigma. I think it's important to populate media with facts and appropriate information on treatment options and medications such as PrEP and PEP." End quote. While new cases of HIV and AIDS are declining across New York alone, there were 50,000 new cases in 2014 nationally, and the number of new cases have stayed stable, according to the CDC. Louis went on to say this, quote, "The difference from 30 years ago is we have the data and the tools to end the HIV epidemic. What hasn't changed much is the shame and stigma still driving the epidemic, getting tested, disclosing, and accessing treatment." So a lot of responses out there. Dr. Dimitri Daskalakis, the assistant commissioner of New York City's Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, told One Magazine that the belly of the epidemic is under control and the health department is focusing their effort on at-risk groups, including minorities and young people. So that's more targeted right there. Sharon Duke, the executive director of ASC NYC, which is a multi-service agency that assists people at risk of living with HIV and AIDS, said this, quote, "Charlie Sheen's experience is no different than anyone living with HIV. Stigma continues to be a challenge, and I think anybody who stands up and says they are HIV positive are brave and important to fighting the stigma that continues to persist." She went on to say this, quote, "That's what we need to talk about. People with HIV are everyday New Yorkers making positive changes in their own lives and communities, getting healthy and getting their lives back on track. World AIDS Day, which is coming up, folks, December 1st, is a really important opportunity to use Charlie Sheen's story as a platform about how we can match resources and knowledge to work towards the end of the epidemic. People need to know their status," end quote. There is a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week HIV and AIDS hotline, folks. If you don't know, you can call 1-800-628-9240, and on there, you can get information about getting tested. I urge you all to get tested. This starts with knowing your status. Everything else comes from there. It starts with knowing your status. If you are listening to this right now and you do not 100% know your status, you need to go get tested. That's where it starts. Testing is not what it used to be. It amazes me. I talk to my students sometimes about testing. They think it's a blood test. It's not a blood test. You do not have to get a blood test. They think it takes a week to get back the results. No, you can get those instant tests. Yes, some take 20 minutes. Some take just 2 or 3 minutes. So go get tested. Go with a friend. Absolutely go with a friend. You don't have to do it by yourself. You can get tested with a friend, or you can just have a friend go with you, or make that offer to someone else. Hey, do you want to go get tested with me? Or hey, do you want me to go get tested with you? Whatever it might be, it all starts with getting tested. So that is my plea to all of you. Exciting news out of Salt Lake City. Salt Lake City, Utah has elected a lesbian mayor. You heard one of our guests talk about this a few weeks ago. Unofficial totals show that Jackie Biskupski, she bested incumbent Ralph Becker this November 3rd to become the mayor of Salt Lake City. She earned 51.5% of the vote to Becker's 48.5%. Becker, right this second, has refused to concede until the official count was announced, so perhaps by the time you hear this, that has changed. While Salt Lake City is home to the headquarters of the famously conservative Mormon Church, its local politics trend progressive. While Biskupski is the first LGBT person to be elected mayor there, or in any major city in the entire state of Utah, she is not the first liberal Democrat. Becker also proudly claimed that designation, as did a previous mayor, Rocky Anderson. City races are nonpartisan there in Salt Lake City. During their campaign, Biskupski and Becker, who had served 2 terms, generally voiced agreement on their goals for the city, such as improving public transportation, fighting crime, and reducing homelessness, with some differences how to accomplish them. This is the second first for Biskupski. She was also the first LGBT person elected to the Utah legislature, winning a seat in the House of Representatives in 1998. She ended up serving 7 terms. Before entering politics, she was an insurance claims investigator. Troy Williams, who is the executive director of Equality Utah, who was on our show just a few weeks ago, he said this, quote, Biskupski's win is historic. Her victory sends a powerful message to all LGBTQ Utahns that their sexual orientation will never be a limitation to public service. We look forward to working alongside Mayor-elect Biskupski to advance policies that will benefit all Utahns. So exciting. I love it. That election also featured Derek Kitchen. Derek Kitchen's election to a seat on the city council. He was one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit that brought marriage equality to Utah. He becomes the second openly gay member of the city council, joining Stan Penfold. So big advances there in Utah. Now, this is not the only news out of Utah since our last original episode of This Show Is So Gay. While we were a little bit away on hiatus, the Mormon Church took their anti-gay policies up a little bit of a notch. In an update to their leadership manual, the church announced that it would deny baptism. They would deny baptism to children of same-sex couples, and for the first time, they listed same-sex marriage under the definition of apostasy, which is the rejection of church teachings. Their policy reads this, quote, a natural or adopted child of a parent living in a same-gender relationship, whether the couple is married or cohabitating, may not receive a name and a blessing. So once those children reach age 18, they can be baptized and become church members if they stop living with parents who are in same-sex relationships and if they take a position opposing such relationships. This is how far the Mormon Church would like to go in making their anti-gay statements. For apostasy, the penalty is up to and including excommunication, which is the severing of all ties to the church. Same-sex marriage will now be listed alongside other actions already considered apostate, such as joining another church and advocating its teachings, or repeatedly advocating any teaching contrary to Mormon doctrine. Randall Thacker, who is the president of Affirmation, which is a group for LGBT Mormons and their allies, said this, quote, it is an unfortunate move by the church today. It does feel like they're cutting us off from the community. Oh, man, I can't do much more than sigh. This is extraordinarily disappointing. He went on to say, Randall Thacker, the president of Affirmation, he went on to say that these actions will be incredibly emotionally damaging to LGBT Mormons, especially young people just coming to terms with their sexuality and to parents seeking to support their LGBT children. He said this, quote, I do not understand that Jesus Christ, who would deny baptism to a child based on the status of his parents, and I am confounded that a church bearing his name would do so. Really disappointing. So that's going on with Mormons all across the world, but a huge concentration of them in Utah. Really disappointing. Really disappointing. Other horrible news out there. Sorry, guys, but this is some of the news, and we need to know what's going on. Calgary police. In Calgary, Calgary police believe a teen who was beaten unconscious by a group of young men this past summer, they now believe that he was attacked for being gay. They are now asking the public for help in identifying the attackers. The attack happened in early morning hours of August 14th. Sergeant Eric Levesque, the hate crimes co-director with the Calgary police, says the victim was at a house party in the Northwest prior to the incident. The suspects were also at the party and had been asked to leave when the party broke up. The victim was approached by the group of 4 to 6 males, believed to be between the ages of 15 and 20, while making his way home. The group then assaulted him, according to police, leaving him unconscious and on the ground. The victim was treated at the hospital and released. The sergeant said this, quote, we believe it to be hate-motivated violence based on a number of factors. Looking at this case, I believe that hate motivation played a significant role in what happened. Really horrible news. Horrible news. There are approximately 50 to 60 hate-motivated incidents in Calgary each year, the majority of which are mischief, including graffiti, but a handful are assaults based on someone's sexual orientation. Levesque did say this, the sergeant said this, quote, in a city of 1.2 million people, if you look at all the incidents that comes to police attention in a year, it's actually a very small number that are hate crimes, but in terms of the impact on the community, it's still too many. These type of offenses are very impactful on the victim because they're very personal. It creates discord, and it kind of pulls at that fabric of our multicultural society, right? So nothing good comes from these type of offenses. So if you are in Calgary and you have any information on this, please get in touch with your local police. It happens all around the world, folks. It happens all around the world. In more U.S. news, political news, having never broken out of the bottom of the polling or out of the undercard debating group, Governor Bobby Jindal dropped out of the race for president this week. He said, quote, "This is not my time." During his short run, Jindal competed heartily to win the mantle of social conservatives. His state was among the last to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples after the Supreme Court ruled in June, and they didn't do so until they were ordered to by three separate courts. He is also one of the three Republicans to appear at the Religious Liberties Conference, dubbed by some as the Kill the Gays rally. It was hosted in Iowa this month by the anti-gay pastor Kevin Swanson. That's that guy that we talked about a few weeks ago that said Frozen is making our preteen girls lesbians. That's that nutty guy. He hosted that conference, and Bobby Jindal was joined at that conference by Texas Senator Ted Cruz and former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee. Jindal shared the stage with Pastor Swanson, who pontificated enthusiastically about the extermination of gays and lesbians. Fighting for so-called religious liberty was a cornerstone of Bobby Jindal's case for becoming president. After lawmakers in his state failed to pass a religious freedom bill akin to the one that failed in Indiana, Bobby Jindal went ahead on his own and issued an executive order barring Louisiana from penalizing any worker who acted in accordance with their sincerely held religious beliefs about marriage. He earned headlines early on for an op-ed in the New York Times that condemned changes made to the Religious Freedom Act in Indiana, saying LGBT activists were trying, quote, to bully elected officials into backing away from strong protections for religious liberty. Bobby Jindal, no longer a candidate for President of the United States. Farewell. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia is famed for his arch-conservative views and often homophobic rhetoric, but even for him, according to The Advocate, he took it up a notch. He said the logic behind making LGBT people a protected minority could just as easily apply to, yes, you guessed it, child molesters. Scalia, speaking to first-year law students at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., says there is no constitutional basis for gay rights decisions made by the court. He said, quote, "What minorities deserve protection? What? It's up to me to identify deserving minorities?" That's what he said, quote, "Those decisions should be made by the people and their elected representatives," he said, "not by judges." He, quote, "allowed that the First Amendment protects political and religious minorities, but suggested that there was no principled way for courts to make further distinctions based on the text of the Constitution." He said, quote, "What about pederasts? What about child abusers? So should I, on the Supreme Court, say that this is a deserving minority? Nobody loves them. No, if you believe in democracy, you should put it to the people. The notion that everything you care about has to be in the Constitution is a very dangerous notion. It begins with stuff that we all agree upon, and at the bottom of that slope is same-sex marriage." This is a guy who is on the Supreme Court, and he's comparing law-abiding citizens. He's comparing me. Let me speak from the eye. He's just comparing me to a pedophile. He's comparing me to a child molester. And that's what he's allowed to do, apparently, because he's on the Supreme Court and he interprets the Constitution. It's so crazy. Well, unsurprisingly, there was swift reaction to Scalia's comments. The New Republic blogger Jeet Heer called the remarks breathtaking in their bigotry, and he wrote, quote, "Apparently, you can be a Supreme Court justice without being able to understand the elementary distinction between consensual relationships between adults and heinous acts that by definition are coercive." I'm reading that one again. This is what this New Republic blogger said, quote, "Apparently, you can be a Supreme Court justice without being able to understand the elementary distinction between consensual relationships between adults and heinous acts that by definition are coercive." Yeah, I don't need to say more than that. There you go. Scalia, Supreme Court Justice, comparing me. And if you're listening and you're LGBT, also comparing you to a pedophile, to a child molester. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. In Indiana, the battle for LGBT non-discrimination protections is flaring up yet again as the state legislature convenes this week to organize in preparation for next year's session. Opponents and supporters of non-discrimination measures are facing off in dueling rallies at the State House while lawmakers work to find a bipartisan solution that balances Democrats' press for full equality and Republicans' concerns about religious liberty. Republican Senate President Pro Tem David Long confirmed this week that a bill will be heard during the 2016 session. He said this, quote, "We're trying to do our best to get a balanced piece of legislation. It will be comprehensive." Religious leaders and anti-gay activists around the state have spread rumors that lawmakers plan to introduce, have hearings on, and pass LGBT non-discrimination protections on that day. While it's technically possible for a law to be passed in a single day, legislators do not hear legislation on Organization Day. If you were listening a few weeks ago, we talked about that story where there were just all these fear tactics that were out there saying, something's going to happen this day, something's going to happen this day, there's going to be a sneak attack. There was no sneak attack. Both Republican and Democrat leaders have said that that rumor, which was perpetuated by Eric Miller, who is one of the state's foremost anti-gay activists, is false. Republican State Senator Brant Hirschman went so far as to publicly challenge Miller to bet $10,000 that the legislature will not advance an LGBT rights bill on that day. Miller refused to accept the wager. Yeah, I probably wouldn't want to lose just $10,000 for something that I know I would just lose $10,000 on. Supporters in Indiana of LGBT protections are also rallying on the State House lawn. Supporters of non-discrimination protections for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people dropped off more than 5,000 letters. 5,000 letters to lawmakers on Tuesday morning, while the Indiana Pastors Alliance gathered about 100 advocates of religious liberty to pray and sing hymns inside the State House. So a lot of attention on Indiana. We got to keep our eyes on Indiana because quite a bit is happening there. Now, in Texas, this is really interesting. So we have been focused so much on HERO, that Houston Equal Rights Ordinance that was soundly defeated in the polls a few weeks ago, denying basic protections to our trans brothers and sisters and other protections to the L's and the G's and the B's. And it failed so hugely because scare tactics were effective there in Houston. Well, in Texas, this is not just a Texas thing. Like, what happened in Houston doesn't categorize the rest of Texas. You only need to look to Dallas. Exactly 1 week after anti-LGBT forces defeated that equal rights ordinance in Houston, the City Council of Dallas showed that bigotry doesn't have to be bigger in Texas. They voted unanimously to expand the big city's anti-discrimination protections. The amendment that was passed clearly defines the rights of transgender people by adding language to the city's existing ordinance, explicitly banning discrimination on the basis of gender identity for anyone living and working in Dallas. Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings said this, quote, "We want to make sure everyone is protected." Sexual orientation has been covered by the city's anti-discrimination law since it was enacted in 2002, but because gender identity is different from sexual orientation, supporters worked with Dallas's LGBT task force to revise the wording, a process which took about a year and culminated in this vote. City Council member Adam Medrano, who leads the city's task force on lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender issues, added the definition of gender identity as determined by a person's own perception. Human Rights Campaign President Chad Griffin said this in a statement, quote, "Today, the Dallas City Council took action to strengthen protections for transgender Americans and reaffirm their commitment to equality and justice for every person. In the wake of a victorious campaign in Houston that attacked transgender people and led to the repeal of common sense protections, Dallas today sent a vital message that they will fight to protect and advance the rights of transgender people." So please, my listeners, do not categorize all of Texas, the entire state of Texas, by what happened in Houston. Although the folks that were successful in Houston, the folks that defeated that ordinance, the folks who used those fear-mongering techniques and were much bolstered by that defeat of HERO, they, fresh off their victory of repealing those non-discrimination protections, they are now going to focus their tactics on Dallas. Although Dallas has had some measure, as I said, of LGBT-inclusive protections in place for more than a decade, after they added this ordinance, Lieutenant Governor Patrick, who is one of those folks who has been on the foreground spouting some anti-gay rhetoric and some fear-mongering techniques and really contributed to the defeat in Houston, he's saying that he is going to get involved. He said this, quote, "I was very proud to help lead the recent effort where an overwhelming majority of voters in Houston successfully voted down the misnamed and misguided HERO ordinance. That's why yesterday's decision by the Dallas City Council in closed session to fast-track the enactment of similar ordinance to allow men in women's restrooms is both mind-boggling and appalling. So these folks who were successful in Houston will now be turning their attention to Dallas. Really disappointing. Really disappointing. But this is why we have to be vigilant. We have to be vigilant. And finally for you all this week, some impressive news out of Washington. A congressional caucus will hold their first ever forum focused on violence against transgender people. This is Congress's first attempt to address the needs of this community. The forum will include several gay and transgender rights activists who are expected to outline challenges facing the transgender community, particularly violence. At least 21 transgender people have been killed this year, according to the Human Rights Campaign. It is the largest number reported since activists began keeping track in 2006. At the same time, the trans community has indeed gained unprecedented attention this year, with the coming out of Caitlyn Jenner, as well as the Pentagon's decision to allow transgender people to start serving openly in the military starting next year. Representative Mike Honda, a Democrat from California, said this, quote, "This week, as we seek to raise awareness of the issues facing the trans community, it is important to renew our commitment to help trans individuals be free of the fear of violence or bullying just for being who they are." So this caucus is also going to announce this week a new transgender equality task force, which will develop legislation aimed at improving conditions for transgender people. So very exciting news out of Washington. Certainly keep our eyes on that as well. And that, my friends, is it for this week's episode of This Show Is So Gay. We are always open to your guest ideas. If you have ideas for guests, please send them on over. Ken@thisshowissogay.com. But you go do whatever it is that you do to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. Whatever your strength is, use it in your own particular way. Don't let anybody else tell you the best way to use your voice. You know what it is. You know what you're good at. You know how you make a difference. So go out there and use your voice. It makes you feel good, and it makes a difference for everybody around you. Hey, while you're out there making a difference, I urge you, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
A moth and you're a flame. I'm good and still you're not to blame. No, you're not a player in the game. All you do is call my name and I run to you ashamed. Oh, because I know I'm not alone. Who I? No strangers on your phone. When we're together on our own, my suspicion only grows. Seeing what you don't show, you're driving me beyond insane. Baby, damn, I'm jealous of the other boys you love. I'm jealous of the ones that you don't, the ones that you want. If I could, I would ignore the hurts, the trouble is I can't. To be completely chill, and yet I doubt I ever will. Now I think of them and I get ill. I can hide it just until, why you getting dressed to kill? Oh, I keep the question in my head while you rip my heart to shreds. I try to go to sleep instead. I imagine you in bed doing what is unsaid. You're driving me beyond insane. Baby, damn, I'm jealous of the other boys you love. I'm jealous of the ones that you don't, the ones that you want. If I could, I would ignore the hurts, the trouble.